You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
It is What's Up and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I'm your host Rafe Houston and today I'm joined by a very special guest. Not a wrestler this time. This man is, well, he's tied up in wrestling. It's kind of I thought it would be an interesting perspective to get a look in with the man crazy enough to let us run Dude, Where's My Ring every 5 weeks or so at a seasonal brewing company. Jesus Christ, can I get my words together? It's Greg from Seasonal. How you going, man?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. As you can tell, I've just finished work. I'm in a tizzy. I can barely speak, but I've got my shit together and I'm glad to just hang out with you, buddy. I thought it'd be fun. Obviously, you've got a bit of a history of fandom with wrestling, and I thought it'd be cool to take a little bit of a walk back to the start and how you got into it and then kind of walk all the way through to how you ended up, you know, helping out Dude and being involved with all of that. How's that sound?
Yep, sounds good to me.
Absolutely. So the way I always phrase it on these shows is I always say, when you think back to, like, some of the first faces in wrestling that stood out to you, who jumps out to you? Who helps you get into the fandom and you know, really kind of hooked you?
So you probably tell by my accent that I'm not from Australia.
Exactly.
I'm from the UK. So when I was growing up, so like pretty young still, so I was probably maybe 4 or 5, but I still have a pretty good recollection of watching. I don't think it was World of Sport at that point. I think it was just a standalone, like, British wrestling TV show. So I'm going to have to say, like, Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks, Kendo Nagasaki, those kind of people were pretty crazy characters, I guess, when you're sort of a five-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. I love that whenever I speak to somebody from the UK, they've always got like some ye olde time English wrestler. They're like, oh, Big Daddy, such and such, and all these wrestlers where I'm like, who the fuck is it?
It was pretty bad, but like you didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Like that kind of Big Daddy Haystack stuff was pretty terrible. When you actually look back at it as an adult. But then there was all this other stuff as well. So I remember watching the TV show with my grandparents. And then they used to take me to live shows as well, which was, I guess it was like the death rattle of the British wrestling scene after the TV. So I used to go to the Great Yarmouth Hippodrome, which they used to take me there on Saturday nights, I think it was. They used to have wrestling every week. Feel like that was like a Jackie Palo Promotions or one of the main ones, joint promotions or something like that, that used to do the TV shows. So I saw some like pretty big names in British wrestling that were kind of still doing the circuit at that point. So yeah, like my favorites at the time, I don't know if anyone knows these people, but Danny Boy Collins was a big sort of. Okay, they call them blue eyes in England instead of faces. And a guy called Chick Cullen as well was also a really big deal. Mike Jones was one of my favourites. I saw people like Rollerball Rocco, Fit Finley. Obviously a lot younger, still had his mullet and like long Irish tights. Had a manager called Princess Paula as well. So yeah, then I as I got older, I kind of finished in the where they used to do this. They still actually do the circus there, so it's actually like an indoor circus arena.
Okay.
In a old UK seaside town, basically.
Yeah. What town was it? Sorry.
Great Yarmouth.
Okay.
Yeah, so I saw a ladder match there once with Kendo Nagasaki, and it was a ladder match for a bag of cash, which really sticks in my mind. which is
well, what else would you want to get?
For the life of me, I can't remember who it was against, but who I just remember that Kendo Nagasaki didn't like retrieve the bag from the ladder. Hit the guy who did with something and then stole the bag and ran out, and that was the finish.
So he didn't actually climb the ladder himself.
So he didn't actually, well, I guess he didn't really win it, but
yeah,
he won the money.
Yeah, exactly. In theory. Or at least thieved the money.
Yeah, and he like never took his mask off either, apparently. So I'm pretty sure we saw him drive him away in a car once and he still had his mask on.
So it was a different tire, right? It was all kayfabe back then.
Like, yeah, everyone thought it was real. My grandparents thought it was real. I guess they weren't that sharp. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got to kind of give them a little bit of a break too, in that they used to watch it in arenas and stuff, and not like on TV. It's a little bit more exposed on TV. Like the cameras are right in there, you can see stuff. They're watching at a distance and that. So we can cut them a little bit of a break. You know, there were lots of people that were full.
It was still like the moves they were doing, I guess, were kind of like legit kind of wrestling moves.
They weren't doing like crazy. Like
everyone had been trained in the Wigan snake pit and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And all the gimmicky WWE stuff hadn't really happened yet. So it was different time.
Towards the end, they started cutting in with a lot of WWF stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be like one week it would be British or like, and then the next week it would be like the best of WWF from, I don't know, 1988 or whatever, whenever it was.
Sure.
So then they stopped doing shows there. And then I started going to a place called Norwich Cornhole, which is.
Sounds familiar for some reason.
Yep. Crazy. Which is basically a place where they would sell animals and grain, and so it didn't smell particularly great and was pretty rough around the edges. It was crazy. It was like, I was still really young. I must have been about 8 or 9, I guess, but it was just all crazy farmers just thinking it was real and trying to fight everyone.
You know how they always refer to a lot of UK wrestlers I've spoken to and different things like that, they always refer to like the UK holiday camps. That like Paige's family ran and like the different things like that. Is it that sort of stuff?
So
is that where
I'm from? I'm from the same city as the Knight family.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So I saw Ricky Knight and Jimmy Ocean as a tag team. I think they were like the Superflies or something. Just dudes wearing crazy, like neon, like 80s tights and, I don't know, Pit Piper sunglasses and stuff like that.
Doing like a shittier version of the Rockers, that kind of.
I remember, again, seeing Kendo Nagasaki match there with, I think his tag partner, I don't know how I remember this, but his tag partner was called Blondie Barrett, I think, off the top of my head.
That's a great name.
And this is how rough it was. I went to the toilet with my granddad, and this wrestler was in this toilet, basically having horse bath in the sink. because that was obviously the level of facilities that there was in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite scary to me as a kid, seeing the bad guy, I guess, in the bathroom completely naked.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. Every kid has to have some like awkward confrontation with, not with a naked man, but with a celebrity, right? Mine was, I don't know if I've, I've told this story on the podcast before. My friends definitely know this story. I once, you would be familiar, I guess, with children's local hero and mascot Fat Cat.
No, I'm not.
No? In Australia?
No.
Okay. You used to like be on the TV like and wish you good night, you know, at 7 p.m. and there's like a little commercial before like the adult shows come on and you see Fat Cat getting into bed is like a big, you know, like a think a football mascot, but he's a cat that only wears shorts.
Was that the ploy to get kids to go to bed on?
Yeah. It's like Fat Cat's going to bed. We've all got to go to bed, right? That's the thing. Yeah. So Fat Cat was coming to my hometown, Geraldton, which is about 4 hours north of here. And it was Fat Cat and Friends was coming. That was pretty exciting for me as a kid. I was, fuck, Fat Cat's coming. This is going to go off, son. And I was very excited to see Fat Cat and I couldn't wait. And in the amphitheater type thing, you could kind of just like get around your kid, whatever. And I bailed. My mum was talking to somebody and I kind of went looking for Fat Cat. And I come around the back of the thing and there's Fat Cat with his head off, you know, having a smoke kind of thing. And I was like, Fat Cat? And he was like, you're not supposed to be back here. Fuck off, kid. Get out of here. And I was and then I like made my mum take me home. I was quite upset that Fat Cat.
I think that was why it sticks in my memory because it's just a traumatic memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yours sounds way more traumatic to me.
Yeah, I remember standing next to Steve / William Regal as well when I at this actual venue because he never really wrestled in the UK that much. Because I think he was a heavyweight and was just touring other countries. But I just have a vague recollection of just being next to him and thinking how massive his maroon boots were. which
his large maroon boots.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of where I started. And then obviously, I started seeing the WWF on TV, and that kind of just took over, basically, in the UK. And we never had, like, satellite TV or cable TV or whatever it was, but my dad's friend did. So he always used to record stuff for us. Mm-hmm. And we used to get the videos sort of like, well, VHS, I guess, like whenever the pay-per-views had been. So I think WrestleMania 5 was the first one I ever watched.
Oh, really? Mine was 9. Yeah. that was the one that got me sucked in.
Yeah. Oh, so you had Caesar's Palace. Oh, man. That was like the doldrums.
Yeah, though at the time I thought it was the coolest shit in the world, right? Like I'd never watched a wrestling show before. I hide the VHS and it's like all the, you know, it's outdoors, all the stuff's going on. The Undertaker's coming to the ring in a chariot. Like there was a lot happening. And to a kid, it seemed pretty cool. And then I proceeded to rent like every tape I could ever find.
Yeah. That was like the steroid era, wasn't it? Like the steroid trials era.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody was jacked as, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think like, it was like Hulk Hogan and Barber Beefcake, like in a tag match, and then Bret Hart and Yokozuna or something like that. There was just a lot of like large in life characters. It was also
the best match on that the Head Shrinkers and the Steiners, they just beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, I love those suits. An underrated match as well as the opening match, which is Shawn Michaels and Tatanka. And I don't think Tatanka's really known for having many good matches, super good matches, but Shawn Michaels sure does. And yeah, he had him lifting at that one. And that's like early Shawn Michaels, like he's just sort of turned, just become the Heartbreak Kid, I guess, sort of vibe. Yeah.
Feels like Sherry.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I can't even remember if he jumped to Luna by that point and Sherry was like helping Tatanka or something.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's something like that. He'd sort of gone to the next thing. But yeah, so when you started to get, like, exposed to WWE and WWF and they started to get on TV and stuff for you, was that when you were a kid? Because for me, I didn't really get it on TV ever until, like, Foxtel and stuff, and I was in uni, so mm-hmm. I was just doing the tapes and things like that. Were you the same?
I was into it pretty much from the get go.
Yeah,
like massive Hogan fan, as you would be as a kid.
From
late '80s, early '90s. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of dropped out of it a little bit, sort of during like the new generation.
Sure,
because it was just so rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
I did watch a bit of WCW in that era as well, because my granddad had this weird satellite TV that somehow had WCW Power Hour.
If there's one thing I can tell you, an English grandfather will have access to things he's not supposed to. My granddad was English, and he was a notorious pirate long before Napster or anything existed like that.
Yeah, so I was like, who the hell is Cactus Jack?
And
Is Van Vader. I've never seen these guys before.
Yeah.
And then I found like the Galoob figures in the shops.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, yes, it's great.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Your Facebook image is Vader. You a big Vader fan?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Later in life, obviously not at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Massively into All Japan stuff. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All Japan and New Japan. Mm-hmm. Definitely my kind of like 94, sort of 95, and then I guess more of the modern day New Japan. So like the Okada, Omega kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you up with it now? I had a bit of a whinge about it on this show not that long
ago. I haven't really watched it for a long time, but I also feel bad for them because they just literally just got everyone left, I guess.
Like, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, everybody got poached or left or whatever it was, and it really left them quite emptied. And then I always kind of felt like it's okay. New Japan's roster is so deep, and then next man up, and there'll just be somebody else, and they'll elevate somebody, and it's fine. And they have done that to an extent, but I don't know what's happened, but it's not so much the wrestlers. Like, any of them can sort of wrestle to that level, I think. Well, not any of them, but a lot of them can. I feel like the actual angles and like the actual booking they're doing at the moment.
There's nothing to get your teeth into.
No, they keep just making decisions where I'm like, why? And why are we retreading this? And why are we, and it really bums me out.
Though.
Yeah.
They run out of ideas, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly.
I kind of dropped out of it for a while there, like, I guess, like, 95 to maybe 97.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't really watching much. I'd still, like, hang out with my grandparents, and they had, like, satellite TV by this point, so I'd always watch it when I was over there, and I wasn't really following it. I think I started watching WWF again at the time, I guess around 97, so just before the Montreal screw job.
Yeah.
Before
it all kicked off real good.
It was starting to pick up again.
Yeah. That's the same. I was watching that like tail end of like when I rented WrestleMania 9 and stuff like that. By the time I kind of made my way through the local videos and stuff, and the newer videos started going, it was that tail end of the In Your House and stuff into, you know, Montreal Screwjob and into thing. That great promo from Stone Cold where he's like, if you want to know what I think about Bret Hart, put an S in front of Hitman. That's what I think.
Yeah.
You know, and he was just starting to, you know, the King of the Ring happens and stuff, and he's starting to kick over into that, like, getting to be a really popular tweener heel type thing.
Yeah, so I started... There was a point there where I was watching sort of all three, I guess, because I was watching WWF with my granddad mostly. I was just going over his house on like Fridays, I think it was on. It was like a delayed kind of showing of like Monday Night Raw.
Mm-hmm.
It was on like a Friday night in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd just stay over. And then there was also a channel that would switch to TNT like really late at night and show Nitro as well.
Oh, that's cool.
And then there was also some German channels which are on there as well that you could like record, and they'd have random like Thunder and stuff as well.
Yeah, okay.
And then, where I'm from is like a seaside town.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to have all these shops down like this particular road which would go to like the seafront, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they'd sell like dodgy country CDs and I don't know, cassettes as well, I guess, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then random like stand-up comedy VHS. But they'd also have loads of, like, I never did tape trading or anything like that. It's just, mm-hmm. I didn't know that it even existed.
Yeah, me neither. I just was like, what, yeah. Have we got a Blockbuster in Geraldton? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And I'd go to all the different video shops because it was quite a few and I'd make my way through them all, you know.
Yeah, so they just have all these random, like, wrestling videos in these shops as well. And I don't think they were very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad bought some for me. So yeah, he ended up buying me some ECW pay-per-views, which were like the ones on VHS, still with all like the unlicensed music on them as well.
Yeah, yeah. How old are you at this point when he's getting you ECW?
So must have been 16 or 17, maybe 18.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's age appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. Well. Ish. My mum didn't think so. But.
Yeah, yeah. Too bad, mum.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember when I was way younger as well, he bought me this. There was loads of like random compilation ones as well. It just have loads of different matches on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that sticks in my mind, which was just Abdullah the Butcher and Dino Bravo just tearing each other apart in Japan. I'm like, Bravo. Damn, why did you give that to me? That's like. I'm 12.
Yeah. Like, well, because he doesn't know. It's, oh, it's wrestling. Yeah. You know, he hasn't looked at it. I used to watch a bit of wrestling with my dad too. He used to be really into like Stone Cold and Bret Hart and stuff.
Mm.
And we would watch it. I remember this one time. Mum also never really liked it. I remember this one time, like I just shaved dad's head while she was out. Like he grew a bit of a beard. So we shaved him in a goatee and shaved his head. And she was so unimpressed with when she came back to him looking like that.
Yeah, I was banned from, me and my brothers were banned from watching wrestling for a while because
fighting and
we used to obviously mess around and I powerbombed one of my brothers onto the bed. Like
I powerbombed my brother onto the floor of the kitchen insane. One time. It was
but
sick.
Then all the wooden slats underneath just broke.
Oh, so, like a table bump.
Basically, yes.
That's hilarious. Yeah, this one time my brother and I got in a fight. My parents were working, like they were both at work or whatever, and he pissed me off and I straight up powerbombed him on the floor of the kitchen. Luckily, didn't break his neck or anything. He was a bit smaller than me and then he's like in tears and shit. And I'm like, oh, sorry, fucking. I'm like hoping he won't tell the parents and being super nice to him and shit.
Yeah.
He sucks though, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. So at which point then do you, like, when do you move to Australia?
I left the UK when I was 27. So I was in the US for a bit, just as a tourist for 3 months.
Uh-huh.
And then I lived in New Zealand for just over a year. And then, yeah, I must have come to Australia in 2013.
Okay.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, lived in a few different places. And I've been in Perth for 5 years, just over 5 years now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Started working at seasonal, I guess, maybe 6 months after they opened.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Nearly from the start.
Yeah. Okay.
When I started there, it was like when I was watching a lot of sort of Progress and
mm-hmm.
New Japan. Whenever I went home to visit, I'd try and go to the Rev Pro New Japan shows as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always good.
My co-host goes to I do another show called Ichiban Sweetcast, which is just all about mm-hmm. New Japan, and he's an American guy, but he's based in London. And yeah, he goes to everything Rev Pro. He loves
that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they do it already. I'm assuming they still do it at York Hall, which is a really
mm-hmm.
good venue as well. Mm-hmm. It's like an old boxing venue in the East End in Bethnal Green.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just got a good a good vibe for fighting, I guess.
Yeah, sure, sure. It's in the bricks. Like.
They still do boxing there as well.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, then I guess I was watching a lot of, like, ROH. We had a thing called the Wrestling Channel in the UK as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever heard about mm-hmm. that.
No.
No.
So, was it like it was an online...
It was a free channel. Yeah, no, it was a free channel on, like, I don't know if it was like Sky or something, but it would show Noah, CZW, ROH. It would show loads of old World of Sport, like British wrestling.
This is I would love that.
Yeah, I can't. There was some other stuff on there as well. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they were like the main ones.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like seeing CZW in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty eye opening.
Yeah, no. That was we're seeing the little sprinkles now, the ECW, the CCW. Where I'm seeing now how you would be when you'd get approached by something like, dude, you'd maybe be at least open to a conversation about it. Where a lot of you probably would.
Well, I wasn't actually. I actually approached Michelle. So I actually
really.
Yeah. So I actually. So you obviously know Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of said to me, "Oh, they're starting this new promotion." With no ring,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, "Perfect! I would love to do wrestling in the brewery because
mm-hmm.
one, what go well together, wrestling and booze,
obviously,
and it's obviously going to be an adult show as well, so it's mm-hmm. going to be adult,
mm-hmm.
And just the site like how seasonal is with the beams and stuff. You could mm-hmm. never fit a ring in there without
no." Not at all.
Knocking yourself out.
Mm-hmm. The layout of that room that we run Dude out of is perfect for the way we use it, right? Like it just works so well. And even with the stage that you guys have now upgraded into, it still works awesome. Like it just, yeah.
It's just, perfect size for it as well. Like people can still see easy. Mm-hmm. It just, and who'd have thought wine barrels would have been such a big addition as well.
Yeah, exactly right. Were they just already there? They were. They're just part of season, right?
They were just there, and we were just like, oh, they'll work.
And they've literally just become like part of how the show works, which is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jazz told you about it, and you looked into it.
Yeah, I initially sent Michelle a message. I think they'd already had the show booked at where was the first one? I forgot Badlands. What it's called now. Badlands, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was already booked. Then we kind of left it at that. And then we had a marketing person working for us at the time, and I think they'd had an email from Michelle, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, right, this is my excuse if it all goes wrong. I can be like, it was their idea.
Nobody needs to know that I initially reached out to them. No, we can be like, the marketing person brought it to me.
Yes. So I can say it was their idea.
And if it works out perfect, then I was the one who pushed it through. So it's like a win-win
exactly,
situation.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. and then I think Michelle got back to me and then, met up with like the guys who were involved, came down to the pub one Sunday and they just had a chat with me, just to mm-hmm. kind of get a feel for the place and how I was as well.
Mm-hmm.
Had an All Japan hat on, so that was a good.
Yeah, well, that's what, when I first met you, I was like, oh, sick. The dude working here is wearing an All Japan hat. I go like, and then I start to notice like the other little signs, like, the tracksuits that look like the Japanese ring crew, but it's like seasonal merch and shit. I'm like, this guy gets it. Yeah. He's clearly just making this stuff for his own interest at this stage.
Yeah, we actually need to do some more of those. And our like steakhouse jackets as well that we
the
have.
The steakhouse
as well.
Jacket that Michelle got, I think you sorted that for her, right? Like, so hot. And they were like, we're going to do a run of them kind of thing. And I guess it's not an easy or cheap thing to do. And they decided not to. But look how well the like NFL jerseys they did sold. It's like,
yeah, loner.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would love one of those jackets. It's so cool.
Yeah, so then we obviously did the first show, and yeah, the guys loved it,
mm-hmm.
and just liked how we ran everything, and how we were just like, yeah, that's cool. You can do whatever you want.
For good or for bad, that is what's your opinion? There's been a few times in that place when I've kind of looked at the wreckage of what's happened.
Like, is that person dead?
And there's like literal bloodstains in the concrete now. And it's like, we'll just put a table over that and nobody will notice tomorrow
at
lunch.
It's all concrete. It's polished. It's meant to look a little bit red. That's the whole point.
That was red wine that was spilt there another time.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's just worked really well. And we all get on really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess we're friends. We have a good working relationship as well. It's just easy. And they're always busy. You're sold out. And that is pretty good when you're selling beers and
absolutely. Cocktails, and doing custom stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much how it's been going. Obviously, I don't know if you want to delve into the Bayswater Council stuff at all.
Can we talk about it? I'd love to talk about it if you're sort of keen. I mean, I'll lay out the my side of it because I don't actually know heaps about it, so I can lay out the scenario and you can flesh it out because we were essentially closed down for a bit there because the local council sort of flagged it with you. So from your point of view, what sort of played out?
So what happened was I think someone complained to the Shire, the local Shire.
Okay.
And
why? Like, what's it got to do with them?
They might come to a show and expected something way different to what they got.
Right, and got scared.
But they couldn't reveal that, if you know what I mean. They
couldn't tell us
who it was. So that was just, they kind of subtly hinted at that.
Yeah. I've heard conspiracy theories about that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we just basically had to have lots of meetings with the Shire and like health people and, because there's no guidelines for this.
And
like,
they
just. Bayswater Shire don't have guidelines for running deathmatch wrestling and
and so are they just trying to like from their point of view are they just trying to like understand it and understand if it's some kind of like risk to the public or like health and safety or whatever they just need to know how it works
so we ended up basically going through all these things just to make sure that they were happy with everything. So I think. But yeah, some of the things they were coming out with were pretty crazy. They thought the wrestlers sewed blood packs under their skin. I don't know if you heard that. And they were like, well, that would be more painful.
How
would you do that?
That's what kind of special effects budget
do you think they've got?
And also, if they are doing that, how is that? Is that worse than them really cutting themselves or is that better? Like, I don't understand.
I don't understand either, but we just kind of sat there and went along with it.
Were they like, where are you sourcing like these special effects from and are they Australian? Like I don't understand what that line of questioning is.
Yeah, it was a bit odd. And they would give us like material of like horror stories that had happened at like wrestling shows and things. And like, none of this is actually true.
Yeah.
See,
the thing you need, and then you have to explain, right? You're like, this is performance art.
Yes.
This is all consensual. It's a work. It's a performance. Yeah. Everybody signs waivers. They all know what they're doing kind of thing. Like, this is an art piece. This is not combat sport.
No.
Yes.
No. But we managed to iron it out. We basically kind of had to follow similar guidelines, which they're already doing. Like, I guess, like piercing and tattoo shops was like the closest thing they could kind of come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had to bring a few more safety measures in. So thinking about it now, it's pretty crazy that there wasn't guardrails.
I mean, fucking deal with it. You know what I mean? Like, Casanova Valentine was running his art shows in New York City with no guardrails and still doesn't, you know? The guardrails thing was funny, though, because the way we were able to introduce it as, like, Mr. Thompson bringing them in was great because it's, like, a Healy thing to do. And, you know, of course the crowd doesn't want to be more safe, and that's nerdy. And he's, like, oh, polishing them.
It actually does look better as well.
It does.
Yeah.
And it allows for the chairs and, like, the like a bit better viewing for people behind. So it does work, like, for sure.
So
in reality, though, can probably hurt the wrestlers worse than if they didn't have it, and, you know, but
they're there because they know what the risks are, whereas I guess the public.
Exactly. Oh, I'm paying attention. I'm drinking a beer, and next thing somebody kicked it out of my hand or something.
So, yeah, we basically just managed to sort of cover everything they asked for. And since then, they haven't really bothered us. We don't advertise in the venue anymore, just so we don't have any issues with that. We just do it all online.
No big sign that's like, tomorrow night, dude, where's my ring here or whatever. Just so nobody's kind of got any reason to start getting up in arms about anything.
Yeah, like, funnily enough, like, maybe a couple of weeks ago, we had, like, just a random sort of, like, health inspection in the kitchen. And I think it was the same guy, and he actually said to her, oh, do you guys still have, like, the cage fight in here? No.
You're not lying either, because we've never actually had cage fighting. That's not something we do. Where would we fit the cage? Like, what are you talking about?
So that's basically where we're at, I guess. So we've been running, what now, two, nearly 3 years?
Yeah. It's gone fast, hasn't it? And it, like, seasonals really become synonymous with it. Like, it's definitely, they've done shows elsewhere, but really seasonal will, I think, like, is the home and will always be the home, it's unless, like, seasonal can't be.
Ring
wrestling in Perth.
And I mean, the Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, exactly. How does it feel to, I guess, be a small part of wrestling history? Because, like, dude is, like, the first ever no ring deathmatch promotion in WA. Like, in Western Australia.
I honestly had not even thought about it, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. But it's true. Like, it is. Occasionally I think of those things and, like, my parts in certain things or the parts I've played in introducing people and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's crazy. That probably wouldn't have happened if I didn't meet that person and, like, and introduce them to this person and things like that. And you're like, the world is a weird place, you know. If you've
only ever meant to be a couple of shows, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, well, when I first met Michelle, I met her in Melbourne during ICW No Holds Barred's tour of, you know, Australia. They came over and teamed up with Deathmatch Down Under. And through podcasting and stuff, been friends with Joel from Deathmatch Down Under, and then also through that met guys like Danny DeMonto, who is, you know, the owner of ICW. And so these are all, like, my mutual friends and, you know, people have been on the podcast and sort of introducing people and doing all this kind of stuff. And then during that, I met Michelle for the first time, and she was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm from Perth as well or whatever. And I'm like, oh, you're Michelle Haslack or whatever. I'm like, so wild that we have never met in Perth, but we meet in Melbourne. And I'm like, you should come on the show. It'd be great to kind of talk to you. And she's like, yeah, I'll do it. Anyway, she had such fun at these shows that she decided that maybe she wanted to run her own. She was pretty disenfranchised with wrestling and pretty over, like, all the, you know, ring stuff. And she was like, literally, this is the most fun I've had in wrestling in, like, forever.
Yeah, but so, I'm the same. Like, there was nothing that was really, like, I'm not really a deathmatch guy, if I'm being honest. Like, I prefer sort of, like, strong style sort of Japanese stuff, I guess.
How was that? Yeah, speaking of strong style matches, how was that Elijah Henry and Charlie Evans, like, just this last week? That was exactly that on the floor of Seasonal Brewing. It was crazy.
Yeah,
it was crazy. But, yeah, we definitely get a bit of everything in there.
Yeah. And, sorry, where were we?
Yeah, you were saying not really the kind of stuff either. And Michelle was the same. She hadn't really done it. And then she went over and did Dream for them. And then she was like, I'm going to run my own show. And she was talking to Joel about it. And he knew she would have maybe put on a band or do something like Badlands. And he was like, you should talk to Rafe because he has been in bands and works in music and has done for like, you know, 10 plus years, whatever it is. Actually fucking longer than that. That's actually been, it's more like 20 years fucking. And hell, I'm way older than I remember. I was in a band for 10 years, but I've been involved with it for 20. And he's like, you should hit him up. He can probably introduce you to some bands and some different things like that. Which is what happened and what I did. And then when that was going on, and I've told this story before, but I was like, who have you got doing commentary for that? And she's like, oh, I haven't thought of it. I'm like, do you want me to just sort that out? And she goes, yeah. And I'm like, fuck, now I need to figure out how to do commentary, right? So I just kind of booked myself and then was like, I'm going to figure it out. Then I reached out to Mean Dean Olsen and was like, you've been doing this for longer than I've been, like, you know, even knowing what wrestling is, do you want to be involved? He was already going to ring announce anyway, so it worked out perfect. But and then it was kind of off to the races, and it went so well at that first show at Badlands that it just seemed natural that it would keep going, you know, and that's it. And then obviously the council stuff was a bit of a bummer, and it really like slowed us down for a time, and then even when we came back,
it was almost good that it was kind of like, yeah, it was kind of good because there was like a big break, and then when it did come back, everyone was so sort of chomping at the bit.
Yeah, sort of absolutely. Well, they kind of seemed for a little bit like they may not come back or what's going to happen, and so the fact that you guys managed to sort it out, persevere with it and get it going, and credit to you for doing that, because there would be a lot of venues as well that even get like a hint of that heat and they wouldn't go, well, I'm gonna go fight this and see what it is. They go, no, we can't do it anymore, guys, it's just too much trouble, blah blah, hey council, we don't do it, they're not with us, blah blah blah, end of story. But I know you guys fucked around with that for months.
Eli was really helpful with that as well because he is such a good talker.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
And he was really good at sort of explaining stuff to the Shire and almost calming them down, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're not like, this isn't Fight Club. This isn't
Everyone walks out of here okay.
Yeah, exactly. We're not running like dogfighting in the back of Cecil. Like, no, it's not anything like that. Yeah.
Well, we could start that.
Ooh, I mean, extensive renovations, you dig a pit, you know. You never know. Yeah. Hey, you've got to make some money somehow. But yeah, I think it's worked out good. And then, you know, they started to slowly ramp up a little bit of death here and there, and some have been more extreme than others. And
yeah, I think it's good. Like, you don't want to overdo it. And then, I think like the last show, obviously there wasn't any death matches, but then it was still a really enjoyable, fun show. Like, it doesn't need to have it on every show.
No, exactly. But when it does, it's obviously always like a highlight and leaves people talking and, you know, and shocked and gasping and things like that. But yeah, like you say, on a fun show like the Halloween show, where everyone's doing costumes and gimmicks and fun stuff, it is an essential. It's just
a night out, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Like a fun night out. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the way everybody took it. Was it the one before that, or maybe the – yeah, I think it was. When I think it was the main was like Mickey Fortune and Slate, and it was a fucking shit show in the best possible way. And I remember standing with you at the end and like, and you're just looking at the wreckage and you're like, fucking hell. You're like, why do I do this again?
There's two particular moments that stick out in my mind that I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, this is pretty brutal.
One of them was, I think Slate choke slam Neil Diamond Cutter on like an ironing board.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite matches in Dude history. They don't even go here. One, Neil Diamond Cutter versus Jared Slate. And I know the exact spot you're talking about. And yeah, that was
just like
crazy.
Hit the corner of the stage. And I was like, oh my God.
It's Neil, though. He's battle tested. He's been doing that shit for 100 years. It doesn't even faze him. He's fine.
Yeah. And I think the other one where I was just like, holy shit, was Mickey jumped off a barrel and double stomped. Again, Slay.
Yeah, no, wasn't it from off the top of the ladder, right? It was like off the top of a ladder through.
This was this most recent one.
Oh, the one before.
This was off a barrel, and he was like laying on this like spring metal bed with barbed wire on it and light tubes on his chest.
I remember that thing. I remember them making that, and they're just like in thongs, like. Fucking wrapping barbed wire, and I'm like, do you guys want to get some covered shoes or something? But yeah, the deathbed.
I don't think I've ever seen Dale wearing shoes though.
Only when he refs, really. You probably haven't seen the clip. I should find it and send it to you. But recently, Neil was wrestling for ICW in the States, and Danny had him in a Razor's Edge type move and threw him to the outside over the chains. There's tables and barbed wire and light tubes and stuff. But as he went, his foot caught the chains of the ICW and he pendulum down like into the side of the ring and I thought he was dead. I thought it was over. And then he was like totally fine. And I was like, what happened? He goes, got
like,
lucky.
He's probably like the same body type as say like a Darby Allin. Maybe just those little guys can just do that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you've been doing it as long as he has, because A, he's smaller, so he's got like a little bit more time to maybe hunch and things like that. I think it's probably also just second nature for him. Like the way he protects himself and the way he knows how to fall and stuff. He's just been doing these hectic stunts for so long that he just is really fucking durable. Because you never really hear about him getting injured either. And I've seen him like do some hectic stuff. He's just one of those guys, a bit like Teflon.
He did. He bought a souvenir from Seasonal, which was so I don't know if you know that we did Seasonal weed grinders.
No, but that does sound like something he would be interested in.
We called them hop grinders because we thought it would be funny.
Yeah, that is funny.
Neil was quite keen on that. He bought one for his. So maybe that's how he deals with all the pain.
Well, I mean, I know it is, but. But yeah, he's in Australia at the moment. He's over for Dream East, and he's around for another week actually. But yeah, unfortunately, not over in Perth again, which is a shame. Anyway, I thought it would be an interesting perspective to just have a chat to you from your side of the fence. You know what I mean? We always speak to the wrestlers and the promoters and people that are in front of the mic. I never speak to the poor bastard that's like helping clean up the venue afterwards and was also the man who kind of put his name on it and then has to deal with any flack that maybe comes from a council or maybe even any other higher up people that are in Seasonal.
Kind of that,
yeah.
The owners of the venue were really supportive as well.
That's great.
They get it. So they trust me. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. What a cool situation to be in where you can kind of take what is essentially like a great family-friendly brewery, and you can still do something like that and everybody has a good time. Anybody that ever goes to those shows can't not have a good time. Like anybody I've taken, anytime friends
come. Everyone leaves with a smile on their face.
Yeah.
I've never seen people not have a bad time. Like I've never seen anyone have a bad time. That's what I'm trying to say.
I have a lot of friends that come regularly and they don't watch wrestling. You know what I mean? They watch Dude, Where's My Ring? They want to see death matches. They're disappointed. And they're not interested in anything I try and show them, anything like that. They just want to go have a beer, hang out in Seasonal, maybe have dinner, like see the craziness, have a good time, go home. And they just, anytime the tickets are on sale, they're buying them, whether I'm there or not. There's been times
dinner
when I'm not.
That's all it is, dinner and a show.
Yeah, exactly right. And like I'll be over East, I'll be overseas and stuff. My friends still go. Without me. Yeah. They don't see me anyway. I'm behind the desk, so it doesn't really matter. But, But yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, thanks so much, mate. I really appreciate your time. Do you want to take a quick minute to promo everything seasonal and even your own band? I know you mentioned you do band stuff and things like that as well. You get all your promo in where you can get it in, all your social medias, and go from there.
Well, I don't even remember them, to be honest.
Oh, well, then, I guess fuck off, I guess.
I can do a quick seasonal promo.
Yeah, let's do that.
On Guildford Road in Maylands, mm-hmm. It's a brew pub. Make loads of good craft beer.
Great beers.
We obviously did a Dude, Where's My Ring beer as well.
Mm-hmm. With Brucha Libre.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great food as well. So, like, it's been actually really nice seeing people that would come for wrestling, and now they just come in all the time and are just regulars. And
becomes their local.
Same with the wrestlers as well. They're always just, like, rocking up and mm-hmm. having drinks and food. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been really cool.
Just the nights that wrestling on, but the people come in, they come in all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it, really, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't think I really have anything else to promo.
Yeah. I remember I came there for a mate's birthday just a couple of weeks ago, and you're like, did you try the Dude Beer yet? And I was like, none. You're like, yo, you just had the cans ready to go and stuff, promoing. So it was great.
Yeah. Keep an eye out on other stuff we're doing. So we do, like, stand-up comedy, like, pretty high level. Loads of bands as well. So we only do, like, original bands, but it's mostly sort of in the punk, hardcore, sort mm-hmm. of metal vein.
Mm-hmm.
Just a good small venue. Mm-hmm. Come have a few beers and watch some entertainment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great food, great beer garden as well, like out the front on Guildford Road there. So for anybody in Perth or anybody that's coming to Perth who's been seeing all the cool shit online that's been going on in Perth lately. We had WWE and we've had Metallica and a whole bunch of things. And they've been doing all these tourism shots and stuff, really pushing it. So, you know, if you come, make sure you check it out. Absolutely. Yeah. What's the, hang on, Seasonal Brewing Co. on Instagram. Check them out. All one word.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. You'll be up
should
with
probably give a shout out to my partner in crime as well, who helped me sort of get it going.
Uh-huh.
What does he call himself? The world's biggest love machine, Jazz?
That's his gimmick name, is it?
I think so, yeah.
Shout out to Jazz, absolute champion behind the bar.
Yeah. He's another big wrestling fan at Seasonal.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have to get Jazz on here at some point.
Oh, man, you'd never get him off. He doesn't shut up.
You'll love it.
If you want to do like a 4-hour podcast, then he's your guy.
Yeah. There you go. I do need to fucking get some content done. Maybe I can just, like, farm it out to him and get him to record it for me.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I'll never know a guy that just, he'll talk forever.
Yeah, he's an absolute legend. I always enjoy seeing him and all the regulars there. Well, man, I got to thank you for your time. Really fun to just chop it up with you and kind of talk a bit of, you know, fandom and Dude and the ins and outs of everything. It's been really great hanging out with you.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, awesome.
For sure. Thanks, I will send you all the dates and get this all promoed and everything like that. I'll have to get some art off you or whatever. Maybe a photo of you in front of the seasonal logo or something.
Yeah, we'll find something.
Absolutely. Everybody out there, make sure you check out Seasonal. Even if you're not in Perth, you can still follow them on Instagram and give them support and keep an eye out. And then if you get to come here ever on holiday and you want to come to the world's most isolated city where we live, that's the first place you should go for a beer. So, mate, thank you so much for your time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Make sure you check out everything Faces and Feels. And we out. Peace. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Count Out Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy. And the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast. And you can check out the Count Out Network and all our sister shows over there at Count Out Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
This has been a Countout Podcast. Every year, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame receives a new crop of potential inductees. And on our new Countout Patreon series titled The Ballot, it's our job to discuss whether or not these newbies should become Hall of Fame wrestlers. Hello, my name is Ryan Knightsey, and every month, a guest and I will analyze the regional careers of newly balloted wrestlers for the Observer Hall of Fame. Are they day one votes? Do they belong at all? Find out on The Ballot every month on patreon.com/countoutpod. Again, check out The Ballot on patreon.com/countoutpod. We hope to see you there.